Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with the Pantograph of Friday, July 5th, 2024. We turn first to page one, which has some beautiful photographs and stories about the 4th of July, titled The Best Way. Downs and Leroy carry on July 4th traditions after morning rain. Stories datelined Downs. Even under Thursday morning's rain showers, the colors red, white, and blue don't run on Independence Day. I would say the colors come out in Downs, added Jordan Gilland, when asked if he agreed with the above patriotic expression. The Downs father of three said he grew up in a bigger community, so it's great to see the village of Downs put on a big July 4th celebration. He added the fireworks show is fairly nice, too. Julian said his family lives across from the interstate and gets a perfect view of the fireworks. He, his wife Michelle, and their children, Lucas, Madeline, and Ethan, were among hundreds lining East Washington Street and more in Downs for the noon step-off for the village's Independence Day parade. Dozens of floats and other vehicles were part of the procession, including semi-trucks, heavy trucks, decorated ATVs, and the Downs Community Fire Protection District fire engines. While forecasts of rain may have momentarily loomed in on some July 4th festivities, several McLean County communities, like Downs, pressed on with their plans to honor the nation's Independence Day. The city of Bloomington's Miller Park and the town of Normal's Fairview Park were both expected to carry on with evening fireworks displays. Leroy's July 4th parade was postponed an hour to 11 a.m. because of showers. Organizers with the American Legion Rural Neal Post 79 called on all Jeep owners to pull up and honor a veteran by giving them a ride in the parade in their Jeep. Mark Young, senior vice commander of the Illinois Legion's 4th Division and Post 79 adjutant, said keeping the parade running and involving veterans in the celebration of America's birthday is the most important thing. It was their third year running the parade. Young said about 14 veterans hopped on for Jeep rides. Seven Jeeps, including a 1940s Willys Jeep, rolled down East Center Street in Leroy for the parade. Sam Eddy, 81, of Leroy, caught a ride with his grandson Braden Fox behind the wheel. When asked if he experienced his share of inclement weather while serving in the Navy, Eddy said no, because he was stationed on the USS Andrew Jackson, a submarine. Eddy served in the U.S. Navy for 7 years. Compared to holidays like Memorial Day and Veterans Day, he said July 4th is the granddaddy of all holidays to commemorate service members. Another veteran there was Harlan Pop Bottles, who served in the U.S. Army in World War II's European Front. He also farmed in the Bellflower area for 47 years. Bottles has been part of Legion Post 79 for 79 years. He said the parade rides are a great way to honor those who fought as well as the fallen service members. This means the world to me, Bottle said of the parade. As a combat medic, he said his fellow soldiers were badly torn and wounded, and he has been asked how he made it through. He said it did not bother him because he tried to not think about how bad they were hurt. I just wanted to help them, he said. Lieutenant Jeremy Lyons with the Downs Community Fire Protection District said they planned for an additional 50 meals this year at their annual Fireman's Pancake Breakfast on Thursday morning. We've already doubled that, he said near the close of breakfast, with over 500 served. Lyons said proceeds go toward the Downs Fire Association to help with gear replacement. Hungry Eaters got their fill under the roof of the DCFPD fire station, along with shelter from the rain. That included Gary Brotherton dining with his wife Marla and his mother-in-law. Also, there was Jackie Gwynn, who is wife of the DCFPD chief, and her three children. Gwynn said crews had responded to a big overnight call and were still working through the morning for the pancake breakfast. She said their firefighters are real heroes who served their community Thursday on little sleep and lots of coffee. Gwynn said she was proud to be part of 4th of July traditions, adding that the holiday fills her with nostalgia and a sense of pride for America and its first responders. She said those traditions are the best way and the only way to celebrate. And there are several photos accompanying this story of children on floats and veterans in cars and generally showing a wonderful time. Our next front page story is headlined, Biden at 81, often sharp, at times forgetful, president described in dual way as fitness concerns continue. This is an Associated Press story, Dateline Washington. President Joe Biden's conduct behind closed doors, in the Oval Office, on Air Force One, and in meetings around the world is described in the same dual way by those who regularly see him in action. He is often sharp and focused, but he also has moments, particularly later in the evening, when his thoughts seem jumbled and he trails off mid-sentence or seems confused. Biden's occasional struggles with focus may not be unusual for someone his age, but at 81 years old and seeking another 4 years in the White House, the moments when he's off his game have taken on a fresh resonance following his disastrous debate performance against Republican Donald Trump. The June 27th face-off alarmed Democrats and his financial backers, in part because Biden seemed so much worse than during the almost routine moments when he's less sharp. That raised questions about whether he is up for a campaign that is only going to get nastier, and whether he can effectively govern for another 4 years if he wins. We understand the concerns. We get it, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said this week, but she insisted Biden has no intention of stepping away from the campaign. This story is based on interviews with 24 people who have spent time with the president privately, some of whom were granted anonymity to discuss interactions that were not intended to be public. Uneven behavior. The way Biden acts in private, according to regular observers, often tracks how he comes off publicly. In both settings, he can be commanding one day and halting another. A day after his debate blunder, Biden's voice at a North Carolina rally was forceful, his eyes alert, his delivery confident. As he spoke, cheers filled the room. I give you my word as a Biden, I would not be running again if I did not believe with all my heart and soul I can do this job, he told supporters, because quite frankly, the stakes are too high. Through it all, public concern about Biden's fitness for another 4 years has been persistent. In an August 2023 poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, fully 77% of U.S. adults said Biden was too old to be effective for 4 more years. Not only did 89% of Republicans say that, but so did 69% of Democrats. A shift in strategy. Biden's advisors have long been aggressively dismissive of questions about his age. Now they acknowledge Biden's slowdown is undeniable. The debate forced the president to more frontally acknowledge the limitations of his age when before he largely made light of it. After internal discussion within the campaign, the White House on Tuesday announced a public blitz. Biden will sit for an interview Friday with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. The president added a trip to Wisconsin on Friday and will head to Philadelphia on Sunday. He will hold a news conference during the NATO summit in Washington next week. Biden's allies worry that the next inevitable misstep, even if it's not of the magnitude of his debate disaster, will resurrect voter concerns about the president's fitness for office. Foreign trips. Three French officials who helped organize Biden's visit to France last month said their U.S. counterparts' reactions to options offered for a state visit in Paris and D-Day commemorations in Normandy made them think the president's health must be fragile. After the Group of Seven summit in Italy, where Biden appeared pale and his movement slow, he flew across 9 time zones to Los Angeles for a glitzy Hollywood fundraiser. One person who spoke with Biden at the event was struck by how tired the president seemed during backstage conversations. Biden on the job. Many in the White House say the president is in command across both domestic issues and critical foreign policy problems. I have been with the president a number of times over the last 3.5 years on some of the most consequential kind of life, death, or peace-type decisions, said Brett McGurk, a senior National Security Council official who has worked for both Republican and Democratic administrations. And what I have seen time and again, repeatedly and consistently, from the first week of the administration until now, is a president who prepares for those engagements, who has very detailed and comprehensive briefs for those engagements, and then does the engagement, and then has a very active follow-up. Democrats so far have been largely unsatisfied with the explanations for Biden's debate performance from White House staff, his campaign, and the president himself. And there is a deeper frustration among some who feel like the president should have handled this much sooner, and he has put them in a difficult position by staying in the race. Another problem for Democrats, with the focus so squarely on Biden, there has been less attention paid to Trump, whose debate performance was riddled with falsehoods about the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot, Democrats' views on abortion rights, and his own revisionist comments about his response on a 2017 neo-Nazi rally. And this next front page story is headlined, Photographer Finds Ansel Adams' Eyes in Road Trip, Dave Fulghum's 4,600-mile western journey full of imagery. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Dave Fulghum is not a wedding photographer. He said he's never been one or chosen to be one. Fulghum, 64, primarily does business-to-business photography, like headshots and corporate architecture, as well as portraits. But the Bloomington photographer and former biologist-slash-chemist did say a friend he's known since high school asked him to shoot his spring wedding in Williams, Arizona. And our last front page story is the Cutting Board column, headlined, Potatoes Offer Memories of Granddad's Chippers, by D. Jack Alcar. I have an honest question. Who does not love potatoes? They're culinarily versatile, can grow on all continents with the exception of Antarctica, and are the perfect comfort vegetable. So yeah, it's about time we talk about these special spuds. History is littered with fun facts about potatoes, from King Frederick II of Prussia encouraging the stealing of potatoes from his royal gardens, to Queen Elizabeth I getting food poisoning because her chefs served the stems and leaves instead of the tuber. That last one may or may not be true, but why ruin a good thing? But despite the potatoes' association with Europe, it is actually native to Central and South America. Over thousands of years, Mesoamerican agriculturists and farmers cultivated a plethora of potatoes, from sweet to savory, gold to purple, and everywhere in between. I actually met someone from Peru who said to this day they have over 3,000 varieties just in Peru. I need to go to Peru. Kathy Troyer of Troyer Family Gardens in Hudson grows a variety of spuds and brings them to the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market beginning in late June. The farm started in the 1990s as Troyer Sweet Corn and introduced more crops as the years went on, Troyer said. We planted the potatoes the second week in April. It just started harvesting this week, about 9 or 10 weeks, she said. Troyer said she doesn't have much problem with pests or disease, which is nice. And yes, you can boil 'em, mash 'em, or stick 'em in a stew, to quote Samwise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Last Saturday, Troyer brought red potatoes to the market and said she uses them for just about anything you would any other savory potato, like a mash or a salad. There's nothing wrong with either of those methods, and I employ them both religiously in our house. But I want to show you a way that lets the potato shine all on its own without a bunch of extra things added to it, like cream or mayonnaise. This method is a throwback to my late grandfather, Dennis Filliman. My mom visited recently, and I wanted to see if I could replicate her father's method of making what he called chippers. I have a smattering of memories of Granddad, the smell of leather seats in his car, singing along to Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, working alongside him in the cedar shed at the cabin he and Grandma built. There's one distinct memory, though, of my granddad standing next to a hot stove, dipping freshly sliced potatoes into a deep cast iron pan filled with hot oil, then retrieving them and salting them right away. I could barely contain myself and must have eaten 3 or 4 potatoes worth of chippers. My mom said he used to get a 50-pound sack of russets and do this. Dennis died 20 years ago, and I can honestly say I haven't had chippers since then, until this week. We're looking at a couple of techniques here, so sharpen your knives because we're making chippers. I took 6 red potatoes and divided them into 2 slicing groups, mandolin sliced and sliced with a knife. If you don't have a mandolin, a box grater will do. The mandolin offered more uniform slices, but I think I'll use a box grater next time because cleaning can be cumbersome. And then I mixed the slices together before dividing them into 2 batches, each 220 grams. Method 1, roasting. Preheat your oven to 400 degrees. Put potatoes in a bowl with a scant tablespoon of corn oil and salt them. Spread the potatoes out on a baking sheet lined with parchment paper and spice them with black pepper and garlic powder. Bake in the hot oven for 20 minutes. Now, these were quite good, spiced and seasoned nicely. Mom liked them dipped in ketchup, but said they didn't need it. But the lack of uniformity meant some parts were more done than others. The second batch we cooked like my granddad did. Method 2, frying. I poured about a half cup of corn oil into a cast iron pan. Honestly, I eyeballed it. I didn't want the thing full, but I wanted more than just a coating, enough for the slices to float. Heat the oil a little over medium high. The oil is ready when it shimmers, and a potato slice immediately starts to bubble when introduced to it. Using caution and working in batches, dip the slices in, flipping once the edges curl, and removing them when the potato is just crisp through. I used a slotted spoon and a slotted spatula for this, testing for doneness. Because the potatoes are suspended in oil, the slight lack of uniformity among the slices did not affect doneness as much as the roasting method. Once done, remove the slices to a colander while repeating the process with the rest of the potatoes. Since the oil was not seasoned and stayed clean, I let it cool completely before straining into a jar for future use. Once everything is done, place the potatoes in a bowl and toss them with salt and fresh dill. This resulted in beautifully golden brown, crispy potato circles that were gone way too quickly, like a fleeting memory. Maybe next time I'll get a big burlap sack, just like Granddad. If you're a farmer or a producer and would like to talk with me for this column, call me at 309-820-3275 or email daniel.alkire@lee.net, and be sure to check back next time to find out what we're chopping up on the cutting board. And we turn now to some local and state news. Here is a collage of several photos with the headline, Celebrate America. The first caption of three women singing says, Christy Villela, Kim Matlock, and Cindy Segobiano sing If I Could Dream during the Pantograph Celebrate America sold-out performance Wednesday at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Next, there is a photo of Michael Gardner III kicking off the Pantograph's annual Celebrate America concert with a trumpet fanfare, and a picture of Joy Baker signing the Star-Spangled Banner during the Pantograph's Celebrate America concert, and a photo of Grace Hayden holding the flag during the Celebrate America concert. And this next story is headlined, Man Detained on Cocaine Sales Charges, datelined Bloomington. A man from Normal is being detained in the McLean County Jail pending trial on multiple felony drug charges. Micah L. Lewis, 28, was seen in court Wednesday for a detention hearing before Judge Jason Chambers, who granted the state's petition to detain. Lewis is charged with two counts of unlawful delivery of a controlled substance, Class X felonies involving two separate incidents in which Lewis is accused of selling cocaine to an unnamed Illinois State Police informant. Assistant State's Attorney Jeff Horvey said, as a Schedule II controlled substance, cocaine is considered a highly dangerous drug under the Controlled Substances Act. He asked Judge Chambers to grant the state's petition to deny Lewis pretrial release on the grounds of dangerousness. As part of an Illinois State Police Task Force 6 investigation, the confidential source told police the defendant sold them between 15 and 100 grams of cocaine on June 25th and July 2nd, according to court documents. Illinois State Police Task Force 6 specialized in the investigation of drug crimes. In arguing for detention, Horvey said the defendant's criminal record includes drug convictions and other serious charges. Lewis previously has been convicted in McLean and Cook counties in Illinois and Lake County in Indiana and has served sentences in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Assistant Public Defender Brian McEldowney said asked the court to grant release and suggested pretrial monitoring. Horvey argued the defendant would not comply with monitoring or other release conditions, considering he was already on pretrial release in another case. Chambers granted the state's petition to detain, noting Lewis was on pretrial release when these alleged offenses occurred. Chambers said he did not believe Lewis would comply with conditions of release and he may pose a significant flight risk. Lewis will be seen in court again for an arraignment on July 12th. And Pub 2 marking 50th anniversary with a party, Dateline Normal. Known to many as a beloved college bar and restaurant, Pub 2 is celebrating 50 years as an uptown Normal staple with a parking lot party this weekend. John Rokos and Terry Strelo opened the pub on June 17, 1974 at 102 North Linden Street. Both Rokos and Strelo have since died, but John's wife, Barb Rokos, still owns the bar, and John's son, Luke Rokos, serves as general manager. Luke Rokos said his dad grew up in Cicero and moved to Bloomington Normal for school. He started working as a manager for George Boylan at Boylan's Pub 1 at 505 West Market Street in Bloomington and saw an opportunity for growth when the town of Normal went wet, allowing liquor, beer, and wine sales, so he and Strelo opened Pub 2. Pub 1 still exists today as the lounge and packaged liquor store. Luke Rocco said one of the biggest things he learned from his father and business partner was how to treat people and grow the community. I mean, people always say it's an honor to be a part of something like this, but it truly is the shoes I've stepped into and the being a part of a legacy like this, Luke Rocco said. He continued, being part of the community and treating people well and being here for literally generations now at this point, all of this is a major factor of why people keep coming back, he said. They come here, and one of the biggest compliments I can see is when people come in and say, it's just like I remember. To commemorate its 50-year milestone, the bar will block off its whole front parking lot for a party from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. this Saturday. Regular service will be available inside and in the beer garden until 2 a.m. The event will feature a Budweiser beer truck, the Jim Blossoms Band from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m., and Funbelievable Balloons of Hudson from 2 to 4 p.m. Luke Rocco said he hopes they'll have enough room for everyone who wants to come celebrate, estimating they can comfortably fit around 150 people in the parking lot. And he said there will be plenty of the Pub 2's famous cheese balls to go around. 50th anniversary t-shirts will be available for sale during the event and during business hours while supplies last. Luke Rocco said he feels blessed for his family's business to have made it through 50 years, especially after the COVID-19 pandemic, when they witnessed several friends and fellow business owners having to close down. I hope we mean a whole lot to the community because, like I said, one thing I've learned is the community has given us so much that we really try to give back to the community whenever the opportunity arises, he said. I just hope there's a lot of fond memories. Luke Rocco has fond memories of the business himself as he met his wife, Christine, there. Normal Mayor Chris Coos also has been a fan of Pub 2. My business was located next to the Pub 2 from 1976 to 1992, and during that time, I probably ate three times my weight in cheeseburgers, said Coos, who also owns and operates Often Running and Vitesse Cycle Shop in Normal. Cheers to their continued success. In 2021 and 2022, Pub 2 was nominated as one of Barstool Sports' top 128 college bars in America. It also was named a top 100 college bar by Playboy magazine in 1998. Luke Rocos was nominated for Best Bartender in 2017 as part of the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards. The bar has had a number of other Reader's Choice nominations and wins over the years, including for Coldest Beer, Best Bar, Best Chili, and Best Burger. Pub 2 is open 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday and Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Tuesday through Thursday, and 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Friday and Saturday. And this next story is headlined, 8-year-old boy dies after crash on I-74. Dateline, Bloomington. An 8-year-old boy has died after a 3-vehicle crash Wednesday night on Interstate 74 between Bloomington and Downs. Illinois State Police responded at about 9:54 p.m. to a crash on I-74 westbound at milepost 139 in McLean County, according to a news release. State police said an SUV had crossed the center median and struck a delivery van and a semi-trailer. The driver of the SUV and the driver of the delivery van were taken to an area hospital with serious injuries, Illinois State Police said. The passenger in the SUV, an 8-year-old boy, was also taken to an area hospital where he was pronounced deceased. The driver of the semi-trailer had no injuries. All lanes of traffic were shut down during the crash investigation and reopened around 4:41 a.m., police said. The crash remains under investigation and no further information was available Thursday. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of July 5th, 2024. I look forward to reading part two with you next.